What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine.
My God, episode 63 already. Wow. Anyway, welcome. I am Ken Levine. Thanks so much for being here. I've got a really good guest on hand today. Ben Mankiewicz is with me. And of course, you know Ben Mankiewicz as the host of Turner Classic Movies. You see him like every 2 hours giving all of those great bits of trivia, those little nuggets about those vintage Hollywood films. Well, we're going to talk about TCM. We're going to talk about the process. We're going to talk about Ben, his career, and even a little baseball. It's really a good interview. And it starts right now.
Hollywood and Levine.
Okay, well, Ben, first of all, you come from certainly a famous family. So let's get that out of the way. Where do you fall between Joseph and Herman and Frank and all of the other Mankiewiczes?
I fall directly from Frank.
Okay.
He's my dad. So Herman, his father's my grandfather. Joe and Herman were brothers, so Joe is my father's uncle, my great uncle.
Okay. So having that name, I mean, in a way it's kind of charm, but also sort of living in the shadow of all of those people, is it kind of tough? Does it sort of seem a burden at times?
Yeah. To paraphrase Stan Lee, you know, with great privilege comes great expectation. So
right.
there's definitely privilege that comes with it, and no question, it's helped me. But you don't want to be the only Mankiewicz who isn't funny and smart and the smartest guy in the room, and so my dad was I would maintain one of the 12 smartest people who ever lived, and there were a lot of smart people who would say, who knew him, be like, yeah, that sounds about right. He's probably eighth. So growing up, I grew up in D.C. with him. He was Robert Kennedy's press secretary and George McGovern's campaign manager, ran the campaign with Gary Hart, president of National Public Radio, was Latin American director of the Peace Corps before that.
Underachiever.
Yeah. Beat the Nazis.
Right.
So he when we'd go out to get the groceries every Saturday, which I always did with him, during the 1970s, he'd get stopped 3-4 times a day, like you were with George Clooney.
Right.
Except people would say, you know, thank you. The Kennedy campaign meant everything to me. The McGovern campaign meant everything to me. And you're an inspiration of why I'm in public service. And as a kid, I'd look at this and I'd think that it was crazy that these people all knew who my dad was and he didn't know their name. He was so nice. You know, afterwards I'd say, you don't know who that person is, do you? And I think that was just hilarious. So there was this sort of Hollywood connection. I was certainly aware of it, but it really didn't mean anything. It was totally, it was dominated by, to me, the sort of success and notoriety that my father had in Washington. And he had it not for being a guy who went to all the parties. He had it for being the person you called when you needed an answer.
So when you were growing up, what did you want to be?
I wanted to be a baseball broadcaster, something you can perhaps
relate to. Pretty
cool,
yeah. Yeah, it's a good, goal.
I mean,
yeah.
It's mostly all I wanted to do. I mean, I suspect, like you, I went to Memorial Stadium in Baltimore, which was the closest park growing up in D.C., no team. And I had a small, as soon as I got to be 13, 14, 15, I'd get one of those small tape recorders. My brother was a reporter then. He's now a correspondent at Dateline NBC, but he was then a radio reporter, and he bought me a little the smallest tape recorder that you could, that you guys would use to record, the reporters would use to record phone conversations,
uh-huh.
mostly. And I sat there in the bleachers and, you know, on the 2-1 offering to Singleton, line drive to left. That's going to get down for a hit, you know.
Did you ever send out tapes to the minor leagues?
No.
Did you ever do it professionally?
No. I sort of had shortly after I came to understand the significance of my family's role in Hollywood, and, you know, look, it's not like they're the Mayers or the Spielbergs, right? But there's a tremendous amount of respect for the work that Joe and Herman did out here. And their offspring, Tom Mankiewicz, my cousin, my father's cousin, you know, wrote, I think, 3 Bond movies, maybe 4, and the first 2 Superman movies. And had a very successful career as a screenwriter out here. And my cousin John, who's the godfather to my daughter, he's writing on Bosch now, and he wrote on House of Cards for years. Similar to when I came out here to visit and somebody at a party bowed their head to me, clicked their heels together, bowed their head when I was introduced and said Hollywood royalty. And I literally thought they were kidding or that, Larry Bogart was coming in behind me. Like I didn't understand what was happening. I sort of decided that sports was not serious. And I think that maybe I thought it wouldn't impress my dad. All stuff.
Being the voice of the Toledo Mud Hens.
Right. Somehow.
Yeah.
Like,
the
you know,
legacy would sort of dip a little bit.
But I was mistaken. I mean, he would have, and he was, you know, a really great, encouraging father. I'm a baseball fan because he's a baseball fan. We went to spring training together every year. He would have thought that was great. And so during this brief period of thinking that wasn't a serious enough life, I decided to be a hard news reporter and went, so I did send tapes out, but it was for that. It was and I got on the air in Charleston, South Carolina, and sort of that started a different path. But it was there was no logical, thoughtful reasoning for not following through.
So how did you go from hard news to TCM?
Hard news was horrible. I mean, it was not because
it was good back then.
Right, it was better. But
yeah.
It was already, that was the 93 to 98, I was in Charleston, and it was already, it was just bad. It was bad. It was bad. The people, I mean, I worked with some great people and friends of mine. Overall, though, there were, you know, it's just, these aren't people who should be spending their lives sharing information with the community for the good of the community. There was a story during the Olympics, you probably saw it, the WLS, the ABC station in Chicago, and they put up that over-the-shoulder graphic for the anchor, and it's, you know, had the Olympic, the circles, and it said, you know, supposed to say, Pyeongchang 2018, and it said PF Chang's,
yeah,
2018. And there was a long explanation. The sports
alternate fact,
right?
They were like
the sports guy was doing a satirical piece the night before, the graphic got messed up. I know what happened is that there are too many people in that newsroom who don't know better, who shouldn't be doing this job. And
right.
So, you know, in a thoughtful newsroom, there's 48 people who'd be like, that says P.F. Chang's. That's a restaurant. Get it off. Fix it. Right? But nobody knows. Nobody cares. That's not what you need when you go to a newsroom to be a producer or a writer or a reporter. And I had so many stories that I knocked on mothers' doors and asked them how they're – I say this all the time, but, you know, I asked, you know, I want to get your – how do you feel your 13-year-old teenager was caught in crossfire and he's dead? And, you know, and I got good at it. They'd come out and they'd talk about their son. And I was just, I always felt gross. Like,
uh-huh.
What am I doing here? Why am I involved in this? You know, let me tell you how they are. Their lives are ruined. That's how they are.
Right.
I know that. So I went to Miami. I got a job in Miami for this Barry Diller station. And it was everything that local news isn't. He was trying to reinvent local news. Like, no fires, no murders. Tons of politics. We were there for the 2000 election, which was great, and the butterfly ballot and the recount and the Elian Gonzalez story, the little kid on the boat who came over from Cuba, came on the raft, and his family died, but his father wanted him back in Cuba. And Diller, who ran the station, Barry Diller, his mantra was, take a stand. Like, you have an opinion for every story, and then back up why you have an opinion. And if you have no opinion, back up why this thing is not worth having an opinion about. So it was great. And I became the anchor there, and we got – nobody watched, but we were good. And it was fun, and it sort of that led me to believe I can't ever go back to local news. That said, before TCM hired me, I mean, I was 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks from coming on as a freelancer at a station in LA if they'd have had me because I had no money.
So how'd you get the TCM job?
Luck, you know, luck is the branch, Ricky. Luck is the residue of design. So I guess there was some design to it, but mostly luck. I had auditioned for every show on television, like every game show, every talk show to host, you know, I love game shows. And I, you know, I thought, and I had the TCM and I had to, TCM had this great idea that they had only one host, Robert Osborne, and they were going to hire a second host on the weekends. And that host was going to have a conversation with either a filmmaker or the offspring of a filmmaker or the DP or the writer. And that was going to be what the weekend programming was, sort of, you know, I'd talk to Theo Epstein about Casablanca and his grandfather, yeah. Great uncle wrote it, right? You know, which by the way would be great. And so we had to compare the Seven Samurai and the Magnificent Seven. And then they kept moving people around in the audition, but they always had them with me. Like, okay, they were like, you be the expert now. Now you be the host. Now I'm going to bring this person. And I was like, oh, I'm doing well because...
That's right. They keep using you.
They're using me. And by the time I got called back for the second audition, and that's what I'm good at, talking to people. So by the time I got back for the second audition, they had been like, this is a terrible idea. We'll never be able to. It's too hard to book. It's just, you know, just do what Robert does, do it on the weekend. So that's the luck part, because if I just come in and read, I don't think I distinguish myself in any way. So this brief idea that they had let me shine an audition in a way that, as I said, I auditioned for 178 shows and never got anything. So I had this moment where it let me sort of, it catered to my strengths, and then they abandoned it. But by then there were only three guys left.
Good lesson in that, obviously, that, you know, you just got to keep trying, you know, 178 auditions. All you need is one to hit.
Yeah. I mean, if you're one for 179, you know, you're never getting out of A ball, right?
That's right.
But if you're one for 179 in this business, hey, look at you, superstar.
Let's talk a little bit about Turner Classic Movies. Now, the thing that is so great about it, as opposed to the way we used to watch movies forever on television, no commercials. What kind of business model do they have that allows them to do that and prosper?
Well, I'm not the best person to talk to about this, but I'll tell you what I know just because I still don't, after how long have I been in television now, really, since I was a sports producer in Washington, my first job. So like, you know.
1946.
That's right. So since like 91, I don't really know how TV works, right? that said, there are two revenue streams for a cable channel, right? Like USA Network gets revenue from ads, obviously, right. Everybody knows that. And they get a fee per subscriber. So everybody who has Comcast and gets USA pays something to Comcast, and Comcast pays some of that to the network.
Right. So they're really double dipping.
That's right. They're double dipping.
Yeah.
We're single dipping. But because, as you know, the TCM is so valuable to the people who value it, right? And frequently I hear it almost every day. I mean, I went to an event at the Television Academy last night, hosted an event about Wormwood with Errol Morris this week. And I, and that must have been 12 people who said, I only continue to get cable because of Turner Classic Movies. So we charge a better and higher fee than USA does. But we're talking pennies. Like we get, I'm making it up, I have no idea, 46 cents per subscriber. But you add up enough subscribers.
Yeah, you have 46 million subscribers, right. And all of a sudden
every month,
money
you,
there.
You got some money. And we don't, you know, we do so much great original programming, the little interstitials you see, everything on the channel looks great. But I think we have 62 employees. Mm-hmm. Like this is not a, you know, TNT, TBS, True TV, the other big channels at Turner have far more employees and far more overhead. So we are a sort of lean, mean operation that for a long time sort of stayed outside the – I mean, we were a Turner property, but we didn't mix with CNN or TNT or TBS. Now, since then, we're sort of much more included in the group, but we're still sort of a – you know, fortunately, we're like a little darling. Everyone's proud that TCM is part of the networks.
Who picks the movies?
A guy named Charlie Tavish leads, my closest friend in the network, big sports fan, big baseball fan, big Cheers fan. He heads the programming department. He's got, of those 60-some-odd employees, you know, four of them work for him. And they, you know, we have movies that are permanently in our library, though we still have to license those from our own library. Again, don't understand this business. And then, you know, we can get other movies, and we do, but we pay for them.
Right. No, I remember when I was hosting that Neil Simon Festival, and I wanted Heartbreak Kid.
Right.
And they had never played that movie on Turner Classics.
We went out and got it, though.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
I love Heartbreak Kid. But that's exactly right. So somebody else, so there's whatever studio that is, probably had that. And so we had to say, hey, we're doing this festival. And then they say, great. And here's where I really don't know. I don't know whether they say, great. $25,000, $400. Like, or yeah, we need a couple things you have. We'll give it to you for free. You owe us two movies in the next 3 years. Like, Charlie would be an itch, you know, he'll tell you all those answers, but, I don't know exactly what happens there.
Do you have any idea? I know, you know, not specific, but kind of ballpark. How many people are watching a movie? Let's say prime time. How many people are watching Turner Classic?
We do. I don't. And I've been told that I've already forgotten because we don't subscribe to the Nielsen ratings because we don't. You need commercials to do that. But we have – there are other ways of finding out. And here, what I do know is that one reason they added me on the weekends was because they had big numbers on the weekends. They had not – I don't mean like they needed me to save the weekends. I just mean they thought, hey, we should probably curate the movies on the weekends. People are home, and it turns out they're watching movies. If it's Saturday afternoon at 2, it's not a throwaway time for a classic movie. This is actually a sit-around-the-TV time for a classic movie. So our numbers are better as the week goes on, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think Saturday is the highest. Sunday and Friday are comparable, and Thursday is pretty big too. And then not as many people on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and it builds up during the week. And it's much, as you might imagine, it's much more significant, which is why we curate the movies only during prime time. The audience is smaller, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Sure. Now, there must be some movie packages that do better. It's like when you have James Bond festivals or Oscar festivals or Natalie Wood film festivals. You probably have like a string of those that you cart out during specific
yeah,
times.
You know, and I wish I'd known because I could have gotten that answer because there's about, you know, there's 10 movies or so that always do great. Best Years of Our Lives always does great.
Really?
Yeah.
Hate that movie.
why don't you like Best Years of Our Lives?
I just think it's so heavy-handed.
It is. But I like it because it dealt with sort of PTSD seriously. And at least that was something. It wasn't just, hey, you're a soldier coming back and it's heroic, sort of. And Wyler himself, William Wyler, who directed it, you know, he'd lost his hearing, I think, in a B-25, you know, shooting those documentaries that he made during the war. So all those directors who went away to war and came back scarred sort of made sort of movies that reflected their scarring. So, and I can't, I think Frederick March and Spencer Tracy always strike me as that they were the sort of standard bearers for acting excellence of that era.
Now, I assume you have not seen all of the movies that you introduced.
It's worse than that. I've seen thousands of them. I don't know whether this is true for you, like when you prepare for an interview or I imagine it's like a baseball game, right? So, you know, you go and when you do a game and it's fresh in your mind and then well, then in the next 78 days, you do 78 games.
Right.
And being able to recall that May 15th game. So frequently. So I can't really speak to me, at least confidently enough for me. I can't speak with really great authority on movies that I, unless I've seen them, with some obvious exceptions, unless I've seen them pretty recently. So the answer is no, there are some I haven't seen. There's still some definite holes in foreign films. There are plenty of movies I introduced that I've seen, but I would need to sit and spend 7 or 8 minutes reading about it. And then I'd be like, oh, okay. Right. Now I remember, but still, of course, people come up to me at our film festival and you know, when movies matter to someone, you know, there are certain movies that movie fans can really talk about. So
right.
People are always asking me, very specific questions. And I always want to say, I probably saw that in 2012. I haven't seen it since, but I have seen 2,800 other movies since then.
People will ask me questions about specific episodes of MASH I wrote, and I don't remember.
Right,
and I wrote it.
And you wrote it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. How candid are you allowed to be?
I'm allowed to be very candid. I mean, with the caveat that our research shows it and obviousness tells us that, you know, TCM is a respite for people. This is a pretty awful, ugly time in America. And there's plenty of places to get politics. And I grew up around politics. I'm a very political person. They let me be as candid as I want when I'm not on the air. But I don't want to say stuff on the air that doesn't make people feel included and that doesn't make people feel like, hey, you know what? I think this person is a socialist and a communist and betrays America.
But boy, some great close-ups.
But you know what? We both love the best years of our lives. Or, you know, we both love James Bond movies. So, and, you know, look, little moments that that cause us to remember that, you know, this is a cliche, but the things that we have apart, the things that divide us, they're big things. They shouldn't be. They're huge things. But, of course, we do have far much more in common. And the things that are in common are big, too. We all love our kids. We all want what's best for our kids. We all want our kids to do well. We all want them to be safe at school. We may disagree about the best way to go about that. But I can be candid. And when it's funny and when the target is sort of an obvious fool, then I have a much easier time. And I've been given, thankfully, totally free rein to savage the House Un-American Activities Committee whenever we talk about the blacklist. So I don't have to be careful to people who want to defend the blacklisting of artists because they'd been members of the Communist Party for 4 weeks in 1936 when, I might add, capitalism had completely failed them.
When you are introducing a movie that's on your top 10 list of movies you hate,
I usually get around that. I get around that. I don't. But I mean, after the movie, and we made up the outro. You know, then I'm more free to say, you know, a lot of people didn't think this worked, and I'm one of them.
Yeah. That's kind of when I was hosting that Neil Simon Film Festival for TCM. And they sent me all of the movies, and I watched them. And there were some of them I said, you know, looking back, they're not very good.
Right. They don't. And, of course, it is wonderful to hold in high esteem those movies that hold up, right, that work for generations and those shows that work for generations and generations. I mean, you know, look, believe me, I would say this to any podcast host. I think Cheers is the best sitcom in the history of television. I think it changed how we think about sitcoms. I don't think there'd be a Seinfeld without Cheers.
But I wish we had a party gift for you. Thank you.
But, like, its responsibility wasn't to hold up. Its responsibility was to be great, as good as it could be then, right? It's a nice bonus that
right,
it still
yeah.
works.
No, in fact, we'd be paralyzed if we would be writing shows thinking, right, oh, my God, in 30 years – what are they going to be thinking of this?
I watched Friends when it was out. I mean, I was a part of that Thursday Night Live. I liked Friends. I watch it now, and I think, boy, that's flat, and the timing is off, and it just doesn't – I don't believe these characters ever existed, and I never felt any of that then. But that's not – I don't think you'd take – like, they crushed it, right? They crushed it then, but it doesn't hold up like Cheers. It doesn't hold up like MASH.
Now, are you guys getting complaints now – that we're in this PC era and this Me Too era, that, you know, James Bond is too chauvinistic. And in the, you know, Humphrey Bogart movies, he slaps women around. You shouldn't be playing those anymore.
I think we're more likely to get it the other way. First of all, TCM has this very unique relationship with its viewers. I mean, you worked, you know, you had a show. You know, you had a successful show in MASH on CBS, and then you have this show on NBC, Cheers. But there were no viewers who were dedicated and loyal and faithful to CBS or NBC. Nobody,
right.
Nobody was like,
no,
oh, I'd
exactly.
lie down on the train tracks for NBC.
Yeah, no, better show on ABC, click.
Right, of course,
right.
And And I don't think as great as, you know, I mean, HBO produces one great show after another. Showtime, you know, just Netflix. They did the event for this week with Errol Morris. But nobody is like, oh, man, whatever Netflix puts on, I'll watch no matter what. No, you watch. You're like, that's terrible. I don't – not for me. Or not maybe not terrible, but not for me. TCM, our viewers, one, love us more than they love anything else on television. Secondly, they feel a duty to watch us because we are the self-appointed guardians of classic Hollywood. They think, okay, you're taking this job. That's a serious job. Don't F it up, right? And so whenever we do anything different, whenever we, during 31 Days of Oscar, which ran, you know, from February 1st until March 3rd, during the Best Actor category, we divided it up by category this year, nominees during the day and then winners in primetime, we included There Will Be Blood for the first time. 2007, Paul Thomas Anderson, Daniel Day-Lewis. You know, all of us at TCM were like thrilled that we got a chance to air There Will Be Blood.
Sure.
And, you know, and there's only one actor who's won Best Actor three times. I think it's important that we salute Daniel Day-Lewis. He's pretty good at what he does. So, but there was a tremendous there was some reaction of, oh, you guys have, you know, now you're going to show 2007 movies. And we would argue always, first of all, we didn't just show it. We showed it in the context of 2 days of Best Actor nominees and winners.
Right.
So you can see what won in 2007, and then you can go back and compare it to Spencer Tracy winning, you know, in 1938.
Right.
So everything is context for us. But we got some complaints also when we aired Best Documentary winners, and that included airing why am I blanking? What's Gore's movie called? Inconvenient Truth. So we aired an Inconvenient Truth, and we obviously got people who said, you know, we're communist sellouts and we're, you know. But that's okay. We, again, context. It's not just going to show up randomly on a Thursday night. It's going to be a night of Best Documentaries, and we're honored to show that in a night of Best Documentaries.
Plus, you know, how often can you show the same movies over and over again? It kind of spruces things up a little bit. Let's talk
real quick. But that said, we're never going to stop doing what we do mostly. I mean, what we do, our wheelhouse is classic movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. That mission statement's never going
to
change.
That's right. We just got to get millennials to understand that black and white movies are cool.
That's right. That's right.
Don't know if it'll ever happen. Let's talk about your process, because we're recording this in Los Angeles, where you live, and yet you record all of your TCM intros in Atlanta. How often do you go to Atlanta?
I go to Atlanta for almost without fail every month for a week.
Okay.
Sometimes 4 days of shooting, sometimes 5 days of shooting, but you go for a full week to Atlanta.
Okay.
And I've been doing that for the time, you know, Robert was on before Robert died. Obviously, he was the main host, and so I was on less, and I would go like every other month or every month for 2 days. But now it's basically the schedule he had, which is a week, a month.
How many do you do a day?
A lot. If there are more than 60, I get bummed out. Like, I'd like to see
60 in one day. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Intros and outros. And the intros are what, like about 2 minutes, and the outros are like one?
Yeah, basically that's right. You know, yeah. A minute 45 to 2:15 for the intro, something like that. You know, Robert, when he started, you know, and the first intro he had was first movie to air was Gone with the Wind. And we've aired that intro, and it's like 4 minutes, right?
Uh-huh.
And so you learned, like, you know, and one of the things we always get is people say, we want more of that, but you don't. like after about 2 minutes, people are like, okay,
yeah, I got it.
Start the movie.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
play the movie. Go ahead and play the movie. Yeah, you got to find the thing that works, and somewhere in that around more or less 2 minutes, that's what works.
Okay, so you started off in news, so you're used to working with a teleprompter. When I did my stint at TCM, I'd never worked with a teleprompter before.
Oh, is that right? Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of picked it up, and, you know, it was, you know, the teleprompter is right on the front of the camera. And I figure, okay, I can read that. That's no problem. And then they said, well, what we're going to do is start with a wide shot and push in on you. So, you know, the camera was like on this crane, and when it pulled way back up, all of a sudden the teleprompter is a postage stamp.
Right, totally. you need good vision. I wear, you know, I have like 30 pair of glasses. I love glasses. And 30 pairs? Pair. 30 pairs.
Yeah, 30 pairs.
Pairs,
I guess.
Yeah, yeah, 30 pairs. Yeah. The being able to read a prompter well, like you're telling a story, is a skill.
Yep.
It's a silly skill, but it's a skill. And you know, it's not like and it's nice because we've had some professional actors, some great actors, come in, and they're not great at it. Mm-hmm. Like their skill and their art is way more impressive, but they can't do this little thing, and that warms my heart.
Yeah, I got better as the day went on.
By the way, that was always true when I was doing news too. You know, when I used to anchor the weekends in Charleston, South Carolina, you know, so you finish Sunday night at 11, you don't come back till 6 o'clock Saturday to anchor. You're reporting during the week, but and you get in a groove, and then by six, I'd be like, how's bad? You get a little better for the 11 o'clock Saturday, then you're pretty good at 6 o'clock Sunday, and then you're solid 11 o'clock Sunday, and then you're done. Yeah. I like having that skill, and I learned all sorts of tricks, you know, breaking eye contact and messing up, not stumbling, but changing words on purpose or skipping words when you can.
So it sounds natural.
I think it tells my brain, hey, I'm not reading. I'm telling a story. Uh-huh. You do little, and sometimes you screw yourself up. I'll skip a word. Turns out a word you needed. Now the sentence makes no sense, and then you just break.
How many takes usually do you do? Can you like nail them on the first take?
I probably average. I'd be curious whether with the director. I would say I averaged probably 1.8 takes.
It's pretty good.
A lot of ones, mostly twos, some threes, and then there'll be, you know, I mean, even as recently as the last thing, I'll be like nine. I just can't, you know, like uh-huh. one I can't. I can't get. I keep messing up in the same place. And then you feel your heart going and you think, you know. The great thing is when I ask to do one again when they think it's been fine, if I ever look at them both afterwards, I'm like, they're identical. I don't know what I thought I did, but.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm used to radio. And if I'm doing radio production and I screw up, it's just me or maybe me and an engineer. But when I'm standing on that set and I screw up, I'm aware of the fact that there's like nine guys going, okay,
four.
We're not going to get to lunch till 3 o'clock because of this idiot.
All I think about is these people are hungry.
Yeah.
And these people want to go home. I walk to my hotel in Midtown Atlanta. They're driving. Atlanta traffic's worse than L.A. They're you know. So, you know, when I go past 4:30, I'm like, but sometimes there's no, you know, but they're all, they, no one's ever said anything. And now I know I've seen other people. I'm a top tier teleprompter reader. It's an odd skill, but
it's something you need.
That's one thing I'm good at.
Yeah. It's like radio. You know, I can talk up to vocals.
Right.
I'm great talking up to vocals. Other than doing it in the car, what a stupid, useless skill that is.
It can be it doesn't translate often. But, you know, it's different. I've done a couple events. I hosted the ASC, the American Society of Cinematographers, their award show, which was a great honor. Cinematographers, obviously, sort of every movie you love.
Any pictures of it?
Any pictures of?
Of, you know, the event.
I think it's streamed. Okay, I think it's online. Yeah. So
one of those guys brought a camera or somebody?
Oh, one of them, right? Yeah, they shot it. Mm-hmm. First of all, you know that.
You well lit.
To me, I look pretty good. This one of the toughest rooms in Hollywood. 72% of them, I'm making this up, English is their second language, right? They're
right.
All Dutch. And you just know that most of their careers, have been spent looking at the director thinking, this idiot, right? Right. and then they wait and they create something great. So I hosted that, but it was the third event I've ever done that had the presidential prompters, the ones on each side.
Uh-huh.
And those, it's very different. You know, it lets you move your head from side to side. But to me, like, I'm almost afraid to see it because I felt like I'm moving my head too much. I'm obviously reading this and everyone.
Right.
And then I'm assured by people, no, you know, because it never looks like they are. But, but man, it's a different thing. Like, I'm used to the one prompter in the back, straight on, that you just read.
Right. Talk about What the Flick.
Oh, I love What the Flick. So I don't get to do it enough anymore. But What the Flick is a show that I do with Alonzo Duraldi, who's the managing editor of The Wrap. Matt Achety, who's now the managing editor of The Young Turks, but was the who did run Rotten Tomatoes. We hired him away from that. And Christy Lemire, who works for RogerEbert.com and spent, I think, 12 years as the main film critic for the Associated Press. All friends of mine. And we just this is a weekly show where we review movies. They don't bristle at this, nor should they. I bristle at the word review. I think of it as me participating with my friends in a conversation about the movie where afterward I give it a rating.
That's nothing like a review at all.
Nothing. Because so many movie critics, you know, studied film criticism, and I don't think that just because I do this at TCM and then I had the at the movies job for a year, like somehow it feels disingenuous to call myself a film critic. So it doesn't, and I just like, but it, whatever you want to call it, that's what it is. And we talk, and I just like it when it's a sort of, you know, the idea that, you know, four friends having a cheeseburger after a movie, talking, helping people figure out whether they're going to see it. But I love doing it. And we do TV too. We do the TV shows that we feel like are in the zeitgeist but we only do TV shows that we like. So even if we are critical of an episode, it's like an episode of a show that we adore.
Okay. And TCM is involved in another streaming program now.
Yeah, so TCM started last, I think, November, so it's been about 16 months, 17 months. Filmstruck, which I think is a pretty good name, and it was Turner's first over-the-top OTT, it's business talk, streaming service, meaning you don't have to have a cable subscription, just like Amazon, just like Netflix. And Filmstruck had like five collections of art house, independent, foreign cult films, including the most significant one, the Criterion Collection, which you had to pay a little more to get. But just for $10.99 a month, you can get Filmstruck or $99 a year, and that includes the Criterion Collection. And Criterion, I mean, it's just some of the greatest movies of all time, and this is the only place where you can stream them. I couldn't be on Filmstruck. There was a very clear, neither could Robert Osborne. When they started it, they were even though TCM produced it, it was just branded separately. It's not TCM. After now about 16 months, those walls have broken down, thanks to our partnership with Warner Home Video. I think that's what they're called. But starting February 26th, we added a number of TCM titles to the Filmstruck library under the TCM Select banner. So now I am hosting 30 or so movies, and we're going to add 4 to 6 movies a month. Eventually, there'll be close to 1,000 TCM options there. So now you can go see, Jean Renoir movies and John Cassavetes movies and, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg and Casablanca. Right. And The Thin Man and 7 Days in May. I mean, some really – the first 25 titles or so. Citizen Kane's coming soon. But the first 25 titles or so. Cat People. Like really, really interesting choices.
Great. You're a busy guy. Really appreciate you taking some time to talk with me.
Oh, anytime. I come in here. I'd come to talk to you anytime, Ken. It was a thrill to meet you the first time, and it's a thrill to talk to you.
Likewise. Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ken.
And that will do it for episode 63 of Hollywood and Levine. Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister Butler, Howard Hoffman, John Wolfert, and the voice of the Oscars, Randy Thomas. You can follow me on Twitter at Ken Levine. You can also write me at any time, and I will answer you back. Again, my email address is HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com, HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com, and I'm on Instagram. I'm everywhere. Hollywood and Levine, if you want to follow me on Instagram. Back next week with another episode. Again, thanks so much for listening. Talk to you next week. Hollywood.